Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Book of the Month from the Borough Bookworm.
The October Book of the Month for Southside Broadcasting is Jamaica Inn by Daphne du Maurier. Written in 1935, this is the first and arguably the most sinister of du Maurier's major novels. Set in Cornwall around the start of the 19th century, it follows the fortunes of Mary Yellen, a young woman left orphaned following the death of her mother. Deciding she hasn't the heart to stay on the family farm alone, Mary travels across Cornwall to live with her surviving relative, Aunt Patience, and her husband, Jos Merrill, who is the landlord of Jamaica Inn. Arriving in the midst of a storm, Mary finds her life is transformed into a nightmare as the dark secrets of Jamaica Inn and her villainous uncle are slowly revealed. Unable to abandon the broken woman her aunt has become, Mary is drawn into the fringes of her uncle's violent and lawless world when she encounters the thieves and villains who frequent the inn on rare Saturday nights. Gradually, the full extent of events at the inn is revealed through the eyes of Mary, who becomes increasingly conflicted, pulled between her loyalty to Aunt Patience, her growing attraction to Joss's younger brother Jem, and her revulsion towards her uncle's criminal activities.
As the days passed, Mary Yellen settled down to life at Jamaica Inn with a sense of stubborn resolution. It was evident that she could not leave her aunts to face the winter alone, but perhaps, with the coming of spring, Patience Merlin could be persuaded to see reason, and the pair of them would leave the moors for the peace and quietude of Helford Valley. This was, at any rate, Mary's hope, and meanwhile, she must make the best of the grim 6 months that lay ahead. And if possible, she was determined to have the better of her uncle in the long run, and expose him and his confederates to the law. She would have shrugged her shoulders at smuggling alone, though the flagrant dishonesty of the trade disgusted her. But all she had seen so far went to prove that Jos Merlin and his friends were not content with this only. They were desperate men, afraid of nothing and no one, and did not stop at murder. The events of that first Saturday night were never far from her mind, and the straggling rope's end hanging from the beam told its own tale. Mary had not a doubt that the stranger had been killed by her uncle and another man, and his body buried somewhere on the moors. There was nothing to prove it, however, and, considered in the light of day, the very story seemed fantastic. She had returned to her room that night after the discovery of the rope, for the open door of the bar suggested that her uncle would be back at any moment, and, exhausted with all she had seen, she must have fallen asleep. But when she woke, the sun was high, and she could hear Aunt Patience pattering about in the hall below. No sign remained of the evening's work. The bar had been swept and tidied, the furniture replaced, and the broken glass taken away, and there was no rope hanging from the beam. The landlord himself spent the morning in the stable and the cowhouse, pitchforking filth into the yard, and doing the work that a cowman should have done had he kept one. And when he came into the kitchen at midday to wolf an enormous meal, he questioned Mary about the farm stock at Helford, and asked for her opinion on a calf that had fallen sick. Nor did he make any reference to the events of the preceding night. He seemed in fair good humour, and went so far as to forget to curse his wife, who hovered around him as usual, watching the expression in his eye like a dog who would please his master. Jos Merlin behaved like a perfectly sober, normal man. It was impossible to believe that he had murdered a fellow being only a few hours before. He might be guiltless of this, of course, and the blame rests upon his unknown companion. But at least Mary had seen him with her own eyes chase the naked idiot boy across the yard, and she had heard the boy scream as he felt the lash of the landlord's whip. She had seen him ringleader of that vile company in the bar. She had heard him threaten the stranger who opposed his will. And here he sat before her now, his mouth full of hot stew, shaking his head over a sick calf. And she answered yes and no in reply to her uncle, and drank down her tea, watching him over the brim of her cup, her eyes travelling from his great plate of steaming stew to his long, powerful fingers, hideous in their strength and grace.
When Mary witnesses a murder and is forced to accompany her uncle and his gang of grotesque misfits on one of their night expeditions, she realises they are much more than mere smugglers. Her own life is now in danger. She is forced to flee the inn, searching for help amongst the local people. But who can be trusted? The suspense builds slowly and expertly through hints and the beautifully drawn settings, and a sense of foreboding runs throughout the book. Du Maurier crafted some of the most famous and haunting horror stories of the last century, including The Birds, Don't Look Now, and Rebecca. Her ability to create tension and the way she uses the wild landscape, particularly in her Cornish novels, make her one of the most exciting writers of her time.
Her heart misgave her at times when she allowed her thoughts to dwell upon the future. How would Aunt Patience act? How would she look when they came to take her husband from her? She was a child, and must be tended as a child. Again she pattered from the kitchen, climbing the stairs to her room, and Mary would hear her drag her box on the floor, pace up and down, as she wrapped a single candlestick in a shawl and put it side by side with a cracked teapot and a faded muslin cap, only to unwrap them again and discard them for treasures more ancient. Joss Merlin would watch her moodily, cursing her in irritation now and again as she dropped something on the floor or caught her foot and stumbled. His mood had changed again overnight. His watch in the kitchen had not improved his temper, and the very fact that the hours had been undisturbed and his visitor had not come upon him made him, if possible, more restless than before. He roamed about the house, nervy and abstracted, muttering to himself at times, peering from his windows as though he expected to see someone come upon him unawares. His nerves reacted upon his wife and Mary. Aunt Patience watched him anxiously, and she too turned her eyes to the window and would listen, her mouth working, her hands twisting and untwisting her apron. No sound came from the peddler in the barred room, nor did the landlord go to him or mention him by name, and this silence was sinister in itself, strange and unnatural. Had the peddler shouted obscenities or thundered on the door, it would have been more in keeping with his character, but he lay there in the darkness without sound or movement, and for all her loathing of him, Mary shuddered at the possibility of his death. At the midday meal, they sat round the table in the kitchen, eating silently, furtively almost, and the landlord, who usually had the appetite of an ox, drummed moodily with his fingers on the table, the cold meat on his plate untouched. Once Mary lifted her eyes and saw him staring at her beneath shaggy brows. The wild fear ran through her mind that he suspected her and had some knowledge of her plans. She had counted upon his high humour of the preceding night, and had been prepared to fall in with it, if necessary, answer banter with banter, setting up no opposition to his will. He sat sullen, though, wrapped in gloom, and this was a mood she had experienced before, and she knew now led to danger. At length, she took courage in both hands, and asked him what time he intended to leave Jamaica Inn. "When I am prepared," he told her shortly, and would say no more.
Although it is almost 80 years old, the book has aged well, and the language is close to that used in modern novels. Jamaica Inn has its share of violence, and is surprisingly graphic in places. Also, whilst the main characters are drawn in some detail and are realistic and believable, many of the minor players seem on occasions to lean towards caricature. This was the style of the time, following writers like Dickens, who set a fashion for large casts of characters, many of them archetypes. Despite these minor shortcomings to 21st century eyes, Jamaica Inn is a splendid book, bold, exciting, and full of suspense, which keeps the reader guessing right to the last page.
On the panel today we have obviously our host and coordinator and scriptwriter Jenny Finch, Alex's author. We have one of the founding members, of course, in many ways, of the Book of the Month sequence in all sorts of ways, Jill Prowse.
Hi there.
And, of course, a legend who needs no introduction whatsoever, Mr. Middlesbrough is how we refer to him in so many ways, of course, editor-in-chief of Fly Me to the Moon fanzine and fine musician, Rob Nichols.
Oh.
So, how do we actually start with respect to Jamaica Inn? Jill, would you like to share your thoughts first and foremost?
I really, really enjoyed it. When I realised we were doing Jamaica Inn by Daphne du Maurier, obviously my thoughts went straight away to Rebecca, which is one a lot of people I think will know, because the film itself is a very good film made of that. And I thought, this one's obviously an earlier book from her. And I didn't know what to expect, but actually, I think as Jenny said, it stands up time-wise fantastically. I didn't find myself being bored because I thought it was old-fashioned or laborious to read. I just got carried away with the story. She's a brilliant writer in so far as she paints such a vivid picture with her words. And for a young woman, when you realise she was 20s when she wrote this book, it's amazing the maturity that comes through and the things that she seemed to know. I was saying to Jenny earlier, obviously she knows the area very well, the moors and, you know, the whole concept of the wreckers on the beaches and things. But there's a maturity with the writing, and she certainly has a fantastic imagination, because she takes you into some very dark places and some of the characters are very frightening. But all the way through, you still have this lightness to it, that you have this romantic side to it. You want to get to the end. You want to see what happens for the characters. And it took me a couple of days to read it. So anybody who thinks it's going to be a hard read, no way. You can't put it down. Have a go, because it's excellent.
Okay, Rob.
When I was a kid, we used to go to Cornwall every year for a holiday. And remember travelling through Bodmin Moor and the Jamaica Inn's middle of Bodmin Moor, and from reading these books, the other books, Daphne du Maurier, you want to go around and look at all the locations, and that the actual inn is in the middle of the moor. It's a bit like the line in Blakey, really, on North Yorkshire Moor, and you can picture through her writing all this sort of sinister goings on, even today, really. And it just the picture that she paints of Cornwall, of that dark side of it, that the tourists like to buy the trinkets about, but wouldn't want to get involved in.
It's or incredible. Plastics, perhaps.
Plastics, yeah. But fantastically atmospheric writer, and superb books that, as you say, you kind of put down and totally stand up today without a doubt.
The first Book of the Month live that we did back as part of the Middlesbrough Literary Festival, I think in Thorntree Library, we were focusing on John Buchan and 39 Steps, and we were commenting then about how he described the Scottish Highlands very accurately and very effectively. Jenny, did you think the same thing can be said for du Maurier in terms of her flavour of Cornwall that she developed, from your own perspective initially as a reader?
Absolutely, yes. And she opens with what's supposed to be the best way to open any kind of horror or crime novel: put the weather in. And there's a lot of weather in it, but there's a lot of weather in that part of Cornwall. And she paints such a grey, cold and frightening atmosphere for a lot of the book. It's riveting and it's beautifully drawn.
It sounds as though it's going to be a two thumbs up job, this, but if we move on to the opening sequence, and Jill, it's commented on that, isn't it just like Dracula, except as opposed to Transylvania, the person is actually left at the crossroads and she's a female?
Well, I suppose you could sort of draw some likenesses there. The way that that she describes, as Jenny said, the weather, and the way she describes the difference between where she comes from, almost, you can almost see her going from colour to black and white, because, you know, she goes from this, what sounds a very happy, lovely area, to this very dark, cold area. But I've read books before, from sort of times past, about the moors, and I think a lot of them do dwell on the fact that if you're not used to that area of the world, if it doesn't, it's not something that you're brought up with, if you're new to it, it can seem very desolate, it can seem very dark and very cold. So I don't think that's something that is unusual or made up. I think that probably it just paints, such as you say, Jenny, a marvellous picture, and it's the perfect backdrop to this whole story, really. It wouldn't work if it was in sort of gorgeous sunny days and things. You know, you need the weather there, you need that bleakness to lend itself to the whole storyline.
Well, you're right in saying that before, say, the 18th century, when people used to be like tourists and going to these areas, and before people invented the term picturesque, then Moorlands was seen as evil, foreboding places that nobody went unless you had to go And so people didn't think that's a beautiful, beautiful scenery. They thought it was evil and don't go anywhere near it.
I was particularly interested, Jenny, in the opening introduction that Sarah Dinant actually puts together in one of the latest editions, I think, that we read from Jamaica Inn. And she makes a point about how Jill's line about reading it in a couple of nights is good on the one hand, because it means it's written at a tremendous pace. But on the other hand, you actually want to savour and over some of the quality of the writing. Now, as somebody who, in Death of the Elven Man, produces wonderful quality writing that I produced and read through that, what did you make of that sort of line? As a writer, do you like to write so that the reader reads at pace, or is it a case of, let's just savour these moments?
I think it's one of the things that writers find is a central conflict. With Jamaica Inn, I belted through it to get the story, but then I wanted to go back and have a second bite, and I wanted to savour it, and so I sort of read it much more slowly, maybe skipped a little of the bits, particularly when I was looking at the moors and so on. I'd stop and read them and think about them. And I think if you can actually do that for your readers, then you have a winning formula. And Du Maurier does that in particularly her five main Cornish novels. They're all like that. You really want to get the story, tell a good story, that's paramount. She does that. But then go back and enjoy the picture she's painted and the way her characters grow out of that landscape. You couldn't pick them up and put them on Chesil Beach, they wouldn't work. They live there, they're of that, and they're that like that because of that moor, because of that evil and that greyness.
This is part of the Discover Middlesbrough Festival, Rob, and I'm thinking at times, I mean, mentioned obviously location is Cornwall, but there are elements of North Yorkshire, certainly Saltburn, Smugglers Caves, etc. Would you say that, Ken, could sort of, you know, there's an echo that comes across from that understanding of our own history in the region?
Yeah, that's right, because we've, again, we have the Lewis and the coastline. We have Saltburn and Staithes with all the tunnels and snickets where there was the smuggling. Obviously, there was an awful lot of things that were taxed in the 18th century and 19th
century.
Any
comments?
No comments.
So there was an awful lot of things that were smuggled. We don't have the wreckers.
People used to actually hold the lights up to actually guide the ships to the shore, and then they'd fall on the rocks and go
from there. That was horrific, really, wasn't it? Yeah. I'd heard about wreckers from history lessons and things when I was younger, but this is very this goes into it very graphically, and this is probably one of the most evil and disturbing sides to the book, really. This whole side to this horrible central character of the uncle, that's what makes you, even when sometimes you might want to feel a bit better about him because you're talking about his brother and maybe he's not being so horrendous to Mary, but at the same time, all you have to think back to is what he does on those beaches and the story he tells her, and there's no way you can be sorry when whatever happens to him happens to him.
The shape of the characters, I thought, were very well put together, and I want to progress that a little bit, but let's sort of invite anybody from the audience who want to actually say anything, or any comments or any sort of points you want to raise about, have we read Jamaica Inn? Have anybody sort of here who's worked through that?
I was surprised, actually, because, I mean, I probably got this, it's probably more of a man attitude, to be honest. Oh, Daphne du Maurier is a woman writer, you know, it's a girly book, probably it's historical, I'm not really into that sort of thing, you know. And just from hearing little bits, I want to read it now, you know,
yes,
straight
do.
Away. I want to read it, and Rebecca, which I haven't seen the film of, but you know, it's made me actually interested in her as an author. And just the language that she used, I think there's this, I think you're right, that I can't remember, it might be Rob had said it, I can't remember, about the language is actually quite close to like modern, but in some ways it isn't. In some ways it, you can tell it was written quite a while ago. And that's actually quite a strength because it gives us a bit of a historical perspective. But also, I'm not a purist about language, but I enjoy lots of different books, but it is what I would call literature. It's a literary book. It's written in a particular way that you appreciate the words. And you don't always do that. I read a lot of modern novels and I enjoy them, but I don't always have that sort of use of language that I really appreciate.
And interestingly, we're probably, I mean, roughly, about the same sort of time after Du Maurier wrote the original book as Du Maurier was when she was writing back about period in history, that 100 or so years thereabouts. So you've got that almost, it's 200 years, and it's still working on that basis of carrying through. What about the characters? Mary Yellen, surely, I mean, she's a feisty young girl, but then in the end she actually throws in and goes, spoiler alert, with Jem.
Yeah, this complete turnabout, really, with her almost, from the character you pick up on at the beginning, where, as you say, she's game for anything and she's a very strong character. I mean, when you first start to read the book, you actually see this rather plain-looking, maybe rough-handed woman who has had to work very hard all her life. But as the book goes on, she paints a picture of a much more attractive girl who actually is very pretty of face. And you know, and then her sort of the love that builds between her and this horrendous figure of the book's brother, it is romantic, and you do sort of, you can feel yourself wanting something to happen. So at the end, you are very happy, but at the same time, there's a part of you that thinks, would she really have done that? But then you think,
she should have stayed with the friendly magistrate.
So, there is a contrast there. And when we give the scores on the doors...
It's a crucial point. Yeah.
The crucial point,
yeah,
at the end.
Exactly.
The slight... deviation from a perfect number will be because of that contrast, but still probably, to be fair, a much more interesting end than the one that maybe the romantic in me wanted. You know, maybe a much more truthful end as well in those times, especially when you go back to all that time ago. Maybe what she wanted was never really there, not attainable, what she wanted to go back to. It might have just all been in her imagination from her young days. And maybe what he offered... was the way forward, so you'll have to read it and find out what
you've
I'm talking about.
You spoiled the end of it. And I was thinking of Breakfast Club, because I love Breakfast Club, except for the central character, who's a slightly independent, gothy girl. She's the one who changes. Everybody else stays the same, and somehow she has to change into something different. And it's a bit like...
I don't know whether she does change into anything different, though, to be fair. You'll have to read it and see what I mean, and gauge that yourself. Whether she will... I think what you'd believe is that they'll go on together with this future, and they'll probably bring something to the table, both of them, because she does have this strength of character. He's a very strong personality. I don't think it'll all be plain sailing. I don't think she'll bow down and be the little woman, but you'll have to read it and see. I always feel at the end of a really good book like this that couldn't she have written like a sequel and told us what happened next in the life of Mary Yellen? That's what I want.
Yeah. That's something of the
J. Mary. Oh, definitely, especially with the moors and everything. And
I'm
reading Jane Eyre at the moment, but Wuthering Heights, I couldn't get into it for ages.
Right.
But I'm going to have a go at that one now. I've listened to you.
Yeah, have another go.
Lens.
Yeah.
Did you think that it was, as I saw it, it was more sort of a, rather sort of a, seeing that the, I saw it as sort of a, somebody's life story as opposed to someone writer saying, how should I do an ending? It's more realistic.
Exactly.
That's what she had. There's no other choice.
That was her choice, wasn't it? She either went with him and experienced the love she wanted to, and she'd fallen for him, obviously, or she turned her back on it. So as you say, much more realistic.
Yeah, but where would she go if she turned her back to it? That
exactly.
Was the problem.
Yeah. Exactly. Back to the family or to be a companion?
No, there was no family.
Like
I mean,
the family who had taken her in, you know, and be a companion is what they offered her, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But not the life she wanted, because it wasn't her, was it? It would have been a staged life.
And yet, interestingly enough, and I'm going to sort of fly the flag for patience, because I kind of empathise with her. I thought she's had challenges in her own ways. There was a line that patience had fallen for Joss in a similar sort of way to what we see Mary Yellen. So I think there's that unanswered question so far as, did Mary Yellen effectively get worn down in the end, whatever happened to, etc. But that's probably what Hitchcock based his whole sort of system on. And I think Jane Seymour was actually also, she portrayed Mary Yellen in terms of that. But anything else you'd like to add to this stage, Jenny, in terms of those characters and the line for you?
I think Mary, all the way through, she stays because she wants to save her aunt, and she can't. She can't save the people on the beach. She can't stop her uncle doing what he's doing. But she can, in some ways, save his brother. And I think to a certain extent, she looks and sees that she is strong enough to match him. And she's going to find her personal salvation and her own life by stopping the cycle there. And that's why she goes with. That's what I'd like to think, anyway. That's
and I'm with you, Jenny. I'm with you. That's what I'm going for.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Southside Broadcasting's Book of the Month on southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. The next Book of the Month, of course, Jenny, will be?
It's The Book Thief.
Mm. ironic as we're actually sort of presenting this from, of course, the Borough Bookworm Bookshop. Don't worry, Kadeem, we won't remove anything without paying you again. It's always crucial.
Not this time.
But we do need to, obviously, as you rightly said earlier, Jill, come down to the final scores for Daphne du Maurier's Jamaica Inn. And Jill?
Nine.
Jenny?
Nine from me as well.
And nine from me.
And I'm going to make it unanimous. I'll go for a nine as well. So there we are. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being part of the second Book of the Month Live and, of course, part of the Discover Middlesbrough Festival at the Borough Bookworm. Thank you.